Hello and welcome back to the Grown Up Girls podcast. Welcome to episode 2 with Lucy Hope. Just a trigger warning that we will be discussing baby loss, infertility and IVF in this episode. If any of this is going to upset you or affect you in any way, please turn away now. Thank you and enjoy the episode. Hello, welcome to the second episode of the Grown Up Girls podcast. I'm here with Lucy Hope. Lucy, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Molly. I'm so happy to be here. And I think this is brilliant, like this whole idea of the Grown Up Girls. I love it. I think it's really cool.
Oh, cool. Thank you so much. Grown Up Girls has already gone global because Lucy is actually in America. You are British living in America. We're already across the pond, which is great.
Yeah, no, I love it. And I think it's amazing that we connected through Instagram and now I'm on your podcast and like I'm in Florida. And you're, I think, in Surrey. You're in Surrey?
Suffolk. Yeah, not far.
But yeah, I think it's really amazing how we've connected this way.
It is really amazing. So just to give you a bit of backstory of how me and Lucy did connect, Lucy has two golden retrievers. Anyone who knows me know I'm literally obsessed with golden retrievers. They're called Albus and Arthur and they have their very own Instagram page, which is actually where I found Lucy. We connected on Instagram, like we've said, and we've just spoken ever since. The more me and Lucy kind of got to know each other, the more it kind of came out that Lucy was actually going through some fertility issues and is actually now going through their first round of IVF. So Lucy, obviously we're going to go into that later on in the podcast, but how are you today? How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm good. It's a bit of a gloomy day for Florida actually, but no, things are good. I've been working from home for a long time, like a lot of people. So that's been nice, but you know, it's been a strange year, as I know it has for everybody. So looking forward to some normality, but I'm going to miss working from home. It's nice to start your day in this relaxed way. You can make your coffee when you want to and you don't have to get dressed and all that stuff. So
I love working from home. Like I work for myself anyway, but I couldn't imagine going back into an office now and being around people.
I know. We actually got the email from work to say they're thinking about opening up in a few weeks and they all do 50-50. So like an A team will go in and then the B team the next week. And I'm anxious about it, honestly, because I haven't been there full time since March last year, almost exactly a year now. And I think people have just got into their own routines at home and your home is like your haven. And if you've established a work routine here, it's going to be so hard to adjust. So yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure.
And how is the COVID situation over in Florida?
So they just hit 2 million cases, actually, I think last week. Which is obviously an incredible amount. There really hasn't been a proper lockdown here at all. Like last April, there was a stay-at-home order from the governor. So just for those 30 days of April, everyone tried to stay at home. Nothing was really open apart from like supermarkets and stuff. But other than that, Florida's been open. I mean, it's kind of a joke from other states. Like people come here because everything is open for business. You can do whatever you want. You can go wherever you want. There's no restrictions. People are wearing masks and businesses have their own ways of dealing with it, but it's kind of been left up to individuals to make decisions that are right for them. So we've kind of had self-imposed lockdown. We haven't been out for dinner in, I don't even know when the last time was, probably almost a year.
Wow, and that's just, really?
That's just our personal choice. But we have friends that, you know, go out and do things normally, like Disney World's open, if that gives you any kind of indication.
That's crazy. So
it's been very different here compared to the UK. And obviously my family are in the UK, so I've seen the impact it's had and how extreme it's been with the lockdowns there. And yeah, we've had nothing like that here, which is just bizarre. But
that is bizarre. So yeah, Let's go back to the start a little bit. For those of you who don't know you, obviously you have some family and friends who listen to this, I'm sure. But for those who don't know you, what do you do? What took you to America?
Yeah, so when I was 19, I moved to America. I actually met my husband, James, in England. He's British as well. And he was moving over to Florida to go to university. And that had always been like a dream of mine. We'd been going to Florida, like a lot of British families. We'd been on holiday and I kind of felt like I knew Orlando, but I really had no idea about Florida thinking about it now. So when I met James, it kind of was like almost a fate thing, like, oh, you're moving to America. That's something I've always wanted to do. And so I just kind of took the leap of faith and I applied to the University of Central Florida and ended up studying American literature there. And so James and I were both at college in Orlando together. And then we went back to England and got married, and then we moved back to America. So we've been here since 2007, pretty much full time, down in Sarasota, which is about 2 hours south of Orlando, because I know lots of British people will know where Orlando is, but not necessarily other places. But we love it here. I miss home for sure, but we're lucky that in normal times, pre-COVID, my family can come out and spend time here. So yeah, that's always nice. But I'm an executive assistant. So I work in the corporate world, which I really enjoy for the most part, like anyone enjoys their 9-to-5 job. Yeah. We've been really lucky and we love life here. So it's nice.
Oh, good. It sounds amazing. I mean, yeah, Dale is always really keen. He's always said he'd quite like to move to America one day. I'm slightly apprehensive about it because I've never really been. Like, you asked me on my Instagram the other day about, have I been to America? I've been to Chicago, Wisconsin and New York, and that is it. And I don't think that gives you a very good overview of America. So, So we very briefly touched on the fact that you are going through IVF at the minute. Mm-hmm. Do you mind taking us back to the stages? Obviously, you say you got married in 2007, did you say?
2012, but yeah, 2012. We moved to the States in 2007, yeah.
Yeah. What was the kind of, did you, after you were married, were you like straight away wanted to try for a baby, or did you want to wait? Like, how did that kind of process pan out?
So after we got married in 2012, we honestly didn't think we wanted children for the longest time. Like, we were focused on, our plan was actually initially to move to New York City. And then when we came to Sarasota, I got a job as a writer really quickly. And we both kind of settled in here and we were focused on that. We honestly didn't think we wanted kids. No one really around us was having children yet. So it wasn't really in our world. And that was just for the longest time, our decision is we probably won't have children. But then fast forward to like 2019, which isn't too long ago, we both had a change of heart, really, just with how important family is to us and seeing friends have babies and how happy they are. It just kind of made us realize how starting your own family is such a magical thing. And we decided that we wanted to try for a baby. So this was in like the very end of 2019. So we started trying. And the first couple of months when you start trying, I feel like you get super excited. And then when it doesn't happen, you're like, oh, it's okay. It's only been a couple of months. And then as you go month to month, you start to get upset about it when you see a negative test every month. And after 6 months, I actually did get a positive pregnancy test. And we were like so excited. Obviously, I was like over the moon. And we told our immediate family, and everyone was excited and it was great. But unfortunately, we lost that pregnancy, which was really painful and hard to deal with.
Sorry to hear that. That must have been excruciatingly painful.
Yeah, it was hard. It's like you hear of things like that happening, but not enough. And so many women go through it. I think it's like 1 in 4 women will experience a loss of pregnancy or miscarriage. And it's just something people are worried to talk about because it's so personal, but we're not educated on it either. So you don't know what's happening to your body, and it's just really hard. You end up just like Googling stuff, and
I don't think
that's right. I think we need to educate girls early on about all aspects of fertility, not just like try not to get pregnant, you know.
I completely agree with you, because we, you know, when you go to school, and especially, I don't know what it's like in America, but in Britain, as you know, it's instantly like, this is how you don't get pregnant. These are condoms, these are the pill, this is what you need to do to not get pregnant. And we spend our whole, well, most of our teenage years in our 20s trying not to get pregnant. And then suddenly when you want to get pregnant, I don't know anything. I didn't even, somebody told me the other day that you can only get pregnant at a certain time of the month.
Yep.
When you're, I honestly, genuinely, hand on heart, had no idea. And that might be me being really naive or stupid, but how am I supposed to know that? Like, you don't get told it.
I was exactly the same. Like, when we first started trying, that was when I found out, like, oh, you have a certain window of the month when you've ovulated that you can get pregnant.
Yeah.
It's not just to, like, you know, any time of the month, go for it and, you know, you're gonna be pregnant the next month. It's a very like small window of time that you have. And to me, it's like amazing that we don't learn about that, or if we do, it's not focused on enough. As you said, the focus is really on don't do this, don't do that, and nothing prepares you for, well, actually, like, wanting to have children is a completely, it's the most like natural of human instincts that there is.
Yeah.
So at some point in most people's lives, they're going to want to do it. So we need to make sure people are equipped to do it and achieve their like family dreams. And I don't think we set girls and boys up to understand that at all.
No, completely agree with you. So once you decided that was it you wanted to try, obviously, unfortunately, yep, you lost a baby, which must have been heartbreaking. Was the next step, did you kind of think, oh, something might be wrong? Or was it like, I'm just going to carry on and see what happens?
Do you know what? I didn't think anything was wrong, because the more I read about it, the more I realized how common miscarriage was. And a lot of stories online were like, oh, I got pregnant really quickly after my miscarriage. And so I went from being really sad and heartbroken to feeling quite hopeful that, oh, next month it could happen, like, or the month after that. And obviously they say to you, try for a year and then start to worry. So at this point we were halfway through, it was 6 months in, I wasn't too concerned. But I did actually make an appointment with the gynecologist that I have here, and she kind of discussed with me the fact that it was normal and, you know, there's no reason to think that we wouldn't get pregnant. But at the time I had my appointment with her, she did suggest that we do some genetic testing, which I hadn't really thought about before. But I guess when you are pregnant, you test for things to make sure the baby's healthy, you know, like Down syndrome. And
yeah,
I think the standard tests that you go through. But she said, if you're planning to get pregnant, why not do those things, do a carrier screening now, so you can understand just your complete situation, complete picture, genetic wise. So I did that. I didn't think anything of it. And like time passed and we were still trying and I was still getting negative tests. And then a couple of months later, I got the results back and it came up positive that I was a carrier for something I'd never heard of before called Fragile X. And it's probably a whole different conversation about exactly what that is, but effectively it means that I had a 50% chance of passing the Fragile X gene onto a child, and that could severely affect them developmentally, for boys physically, for girls. It's a little bit less clear how they're affected, but yeah, the other repercussion of Fragile X is some carriers have premature ovarian insufficiency, which means that your ovaries are not working the way they should and you don't have as many eggs as you should for your age. And unfortunately, I came to realise quickly that that was my situation.
Right. Okay. Gosh, I've never even heard of that before. That is just, yeah. So how common is that? Is it something, you know, to... And do you only know about it if you go for these tests?
Yeah, I don't think it's very common. It's something you'd only know about if you did a genetic carrier screening. So a lot of people only find out about Fragile X once they've had a baby that's affected, and then they'll get tested and realize that they're a carrier. Okay. So I think genetic screening is something that I would 100% advocate anyone to do if you have access to it. It gives you such a complete picture of things you never even thought about, and like Fragile X that you've never even heard of. And I wish that it was offered, or I wish that like everyone at birth just had a genetic screening so you knew what you were carrier of for the rest of your life, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not that common, because that was the first question I asked my gynecologist when she told me, because I was thinking, oh, I'm sure people are carriers of lots of things and it's fine. But she said, no, you know, it's not that common, and here's like some potential consequences of it. And then from there, obviously, our trying to conceive took a completely different turn, because we now had to consider the fact that I could pass this syndrome onto a child.
Yeah, and that's a really, really tough thing to do, isn't it? Like, to think about. It's one thing trying to have a child and to have a healthy child as well, but then to kind of have that feeling that I don't want to pass anything onto them. It's just... Must be really, really hard. So after that, obviously you found out that news and it must have been such a worry. Was it then a situation of, I have to go through IVF?
Well, yeah, for us, I mean, everyone obviously makes their own decisions and their own choices, but with my diagnosis of the ovarian insufficiency, it meant that getting pregnant naturally would be very difficult.
So not impossible, but difficult.
Yeah, not impossible, but it would take probably a long time. I think we had something like a 5% chance. So very low chance. And I'm 32, so I'm not old, but also in the fertility world, they say at 35, things do noticeably decline. So I'm not like in my 20s, basically. Mm-hmm. So thinking about timing and everything like that, we discussed it a lot and we decided that the best option for us was to pursue IVF with genetic testing on the embryos so that we could make sure that we don't transfer Fragile X syndrome to our baby.
Yeah. Okay. So you're obviously in the throes of that now. How are you finding it? Is it because I've been through it, but a lot of my friends that have just say it is grueling. It's a really invasive, tough thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something I never thought I'd go through, and I think most people that do it never anticipated they would. It's physically, it is demanding. You're doing injections like every single day, and you do them at home. So my husband was doing them for me. That's kind of scary because you have to educate yourself. Well, the clinic obviously gives you all the information, but you still are the one mixing the medicine and like all these needles and these like sharp containers and stuff that just I never thought we would have to do. But I think what's more draining is the emotional side of it. The physical I could take. I mean, I was uncomfortable, but it was more the mental side of it. Like, what if this doesn't work and I'm going through all of this? And there's just so many unknowns. I think it's very like mentally draining for couples to go through. And you have to, I think your relationship like has to be rock solid, honestly, to go through it as a couple. I know some people go through it single and there's lots of different situations, but if you're going through it as a couple, you have to be on the same page about doing it in the first place and just be prepared for a roller coaster of emotions.
Yeah, I think that's a really good advice, because yeah, it's just such a tricky thing to go through as a couple, I can imagine, because when one of you is going through it, the other, like the man, bless him, I mean, like you say, he's injecting you and it is what it is, but he will never go through that real emotional turmoil the same as what you are. I mean, he probably is in his own way, but I don't think, I can imagine it's probably not the same level.
Yeah, I think, well, James in particular is very rational and I'm more emotional. So I'm lucky that we balance each other out in that way, because he'll look at all the facts of a situation and he doesn't worry. He waits till he has facts, whereas I try and like predict what's going to happen next. And then I start worrying about it. And I think a lot of girls just do that naturally. We're just worriers. But I think if you've got a worrier and you've got somebody that's more rational, that's a good combination for something like this, because the worrier keeps you prepared and then the rational person keeps you balanced. Yeah. So I think we've had a good, you know, just a good personality blend for this whole thing.
Yeah, it sounds like it's lucky you've got each other.
Yeah.
So obviously I spoke on my Instagram stories the other day, which you did reply to me about the fact of asking people if they're going to be trying to have babies soon and that kind of situation. And you were quite strong against the fact that you just shouldn't ask. It's just a no-go zone. And I, after that whole Instagram situation, people telling me their experiences, you in particular, definitely confirmed to me that it is just a no-go zone asking anything about babies, fertility. And I just want to ask you, obviously, between the ages of sort of like 25, 40, I've definitely found a huge shift in people saying, announcing that they're pregnant and things like that. How do you find that? Does it make you emotional, or are you quite hard to the fact now that when you see announcements, it is what it is, or do you struggle with them?
I think at first I did struggle with seeing announcements and things like that. It's actually like strange for me, because I struggled more with announcements from people I didn't really know. But then like my best friend here was pregnant, and that didn't upset me at all, because I know her and I know what she's been through. And I think I just had a different perspective on it. But like, for some reason, celebrity ones would upset me. Like, I saw Gigi Hadid posted that amazing photo of her and her like amazing pregnancy figure and stuff, and that really like upset me. And I don't even know her, but it was just bringing pregnancy into the forefront on your news feed that you're scrolling through.
I think it's one of them things where you think like, oh God, of course she's pregnant because she's got it
all.
Of course.
Yeah, exactly.
And I can imagine that's the kind of reaction that you have, and it's hard. It would be hard to restrain yourself back from that fact, because we don't even know what Gigi Hadid's been through. She could have been through lots of different things, but on the outset, you're just like, oh yeah, of course she's pregnant.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And I think that it's hard to share because it's so personal, but I wish that more people that have been through it and then post about happy news would share if they have gone through a struggle, because it helps so much to normalize that. And I know everybody is different and some people don't feel comfortable, but as you said, there's usually a story behind everything. There are some lucky people that just start trying and then they're pregnant and they never see any kind of struggle. But I think for a lot of people, that's not the case. And the more we talk about it, the easier it is for other people to feel comfortable with their situation and find some peace in what they're going through.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if I hadn't have seen you be so open, and some friends and even some celebrities that are so open about their struggles online, I wouldn't have had a clue. I just wouldn't have even had a clue. And that even scares me to think that I wouldn't have had a clue, because it, like you say, it's one in four. Did you say one in four women that struggle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one in four women have been through a miscarriage, and then it's like one in eight couples will go through some kind of fertility struggles.
It isn't spoken about enough. And I think this is why I wanted to get you on, because not even for people that are struggling, but for people that don't know anything about it, it's good to know. You know, it's horrible, but at the same time, because it's kind of at your expense, we're talking about it and what you're going through is horrible, but it is good to educate people. And that's why I thank you for coming on, because it's good to chat about these things for sure. So
yeah.
So when it comes to, you know, the IVF and the stage that you're at now, I don't know much about IVF, but I'm guessing that they can tell fairly early whether you are pregnant, kind of earlier than what you would do if you conceived naturally.
Yeah, so the way it works is there's a couple of different paths you can take within IVF. And for us, because we're doing genetic testing, if we have a healthy embryo, which we'll find out in a couple of weeks, so that we're currently in that waiting period, we would do what's called, fingers crossed, a frozen transfer. So our embryos have been cryopreserved. And if we get to a point where we have a healthy embryo, we would then go through a cycle, and you kind of trick your body into going through the pre-pregnancy process. So funnily enough, you'd go on the contraceptive pill to quiet your ovaries, and then you take the hormones that would think your body's gearing up for pregnancy, and then at the right time they would transfer your embryo, and then 2 weeks after that you'd have a blood test and they'll tell you what your HCG, which is the pregnancy hormone, level is. Now, a lot of people do the home pregnancy tests while they're waiting, really tempting, because I think some people start to get positive lines about 5 days after they've transferred, so it's quite soon for some people that you'd be able to tell, and because it's such a precise and scientific thing, it's just really tempting to, you know, test and be curious. And I think, I don't know what I'll do if I'm in that situation, but it's a lot to think about, a lot of decisions to make.
Definitely. And have you, with IVF, I've seen a few people, you know, they get quite hooked on the whole changing the diet and that kind of thing. Have you done any of that, or have you tried to stay like as normal as you can?
I did do a lot of lifestyle and supplements, and I also did acupuncture for a long time. So when I had the pregnancy loss, I was looking into just ways to boost fertility. And one of the things that came up consistently was acupuncture. So I started doing that in June of last year. So by the time I did my IVF cycle, I'd been going for 8 months, pretty consistently on a weekly basis. There's also just, if you Google it, you'll find a new supplement every single day that people are taking to boost fertility. So it's easy to kind of fall into the trap of taking a billion different things. But I just kind of decided on what I thought was the most important. Obviously checked with my doctor, can I take all these things, which he okayed, and then went from there. But I got into a good routine of just healthy, no alcohol. I haven't had caffeine for probably like 6 months. I had like a couple of coffees at Christmas, and that was just a decision I made. I mean, it's up to each individual to just talk to their doctor and figure out what's best. But I just wanted to prepare my body as much as I could with things that are in my control. It also just made me feel better that I had some control over like some of the process by preparing myself as best I could with diet. And I was eating like one whole avocado every day consistently, because there's like some study that says the Mediterranean diet can boost IVF success. So I thought, well, I love avocado, I may as well like incorporate things like that that can only help, they can't hurt. So I did change a lot of things, and I made like a really comprehensive list of everything that I did. So I have that if anyone ever goes to IVF and they're curious, I'm happy to share some of the information.
Yeah, brilliant. So yeah, everything's crossed for you and James. Like, it must just be such a nervous wait, but such a, yeah, just anticipation of just knowing, not knowing and knowing. And yeah.
I know. Yeah, there's so many like small milestones when you go through it. Like, I had you have an egg collection surgery where they go in and they basically take out as many eggs as possible. And then from there you wait like over a certain number of days to see how things progress. Like, the first phone call you get is how many of your eggs have fertilized successfully. Then you have to wait 3 days to see if those embryos are continuing to develop. And then you have to get another phone call on day 5, which tells you how many have become blastocysts, which is the final stage of an embryo, at which point they can be frozen. So there's lots of like little steps in that first week. And then for us now doing the genetic testing, we could be waiting up to like 3 or 4 weeks for those results. So it's a lot of like hurry up and wait, honestly. And you have to practice the art of patience every day and try and just focus on other things. Yeah. But yeah, I'm hopeful. I think that we have better results than even our doctor was anticipating, which was just made us both really happy. And I just hope that we're able to have a healthy baby at the end of the road. But yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. You really are amazing. It's a lot to go through. And the emotional side of things, I just want to touch on briefly. So have you found yourself, obviously incredibly emotional, especially with the loss, but have you found yourself having to, like you say, you're practicing the art of patience, but have you found yourself having to try and calm yourself? Like, have you done any therapy or any like meditation, anything like that, that helps you with the emotional side and that you could maybe share?
Yeah, I did actually. I started doing walking meditations, which I didn't even know were a thing, but I knew I wanted to do daily walks because it helps with blood flow and all of that. And that's really important just for, you know, healthy reproductive organs. And especially when you're going through IVF, you want to keep the blood flow going as much as possible. So I was doing these daily walks and get up and go and get out there with my AirPods. And I found this woman on Instagram called Mimi Bouchard, and she does walking meditations. And they're not necessarily connected to IVF, but they're just about like manifestation and creating your future and how to be just positive, and that positivity is a choice that you can make. When you wake up, you can say, I'm going to have a good day, and you can try and like train your mind to, it's the way you react to things, you know, versus like what's happening to you. So I did those literally every single day, and I just, there's parts of those meditations where she'll just have music playing and she'll say, think about the things that you want and they'll happen. And I would just like think about things like driving home from the hospital with our baby, or like just the doctor being surprised at how well I'd responded to the IVF medicine. And yeah, I tried to just like imagine those things happening. And I know some people will think, oh, well, that's just like, you know, hocus pocus or whatever. Yeah. But for me, it helped to just train my mind to live in like the positivity realm versus like letting yourself wander into all those negative thoughts that can cloud your mind.
No, I'm a total advocate of that. I've been starting manifestation recently, and I know what you mean. Some of it is a bit like, oh God, yeah, all right. But I do totally agree with you about the whole positive thoughts thing. You have got to imagine, you've got to think ahead and think, right, in this however long, you say I'll be holding my baby, or I'll be releasing this, or you know, whatever it is that you're going through, you have got to imagine it. So no, it's good, and it's good to share, because if anybody's listening to this who's in a similar situation, it's good to share other things that are helping. So thank you for that.
So
we end this podcast with something that you would tell your younger self. And by younger, I mean, it can be anything. Some people, you know, will want to say younger as in when they were 10 or when they were 20 or 30 or whatever it is. Is there something that you would tell your younger self to do or to not worry about?
I think like now I'm in my 30s, I would tell myself in my 20s, don't worry about what people think about you. Because it doesn't matter at all. And then when it relates to fertility, I would tell my younger self, just don't take things for granted. Like at the moment, you don't think you want children, but as you get older, your circumstances change, you know, your life changes, you might meet somebody. Don't rule anything out and be an advocate for yourself and your medical situation, whatever it happens to be. Especially with fertility, if there's anyone listening that kids are probably far off for them, like they're not thinking about it right now, just start doing some research on getting pregnant. Even if you like think right now you don't want kids, just educate yourself. There's a really good book actually called Taking Charge of Your Fertility. And it just details every single thing you'd ever want to know about female fertility, getting pregnant. And it goes into a little bit about IVF too, but I highly recommend that book just for everyone to read.
I might read that actually. I think that
And I would give it to my younger self, I think, even though I'd probably be like, whatever, this is stupid, I don't want to read it. But it just opens your eyes to your health situation. And it's something I think we ignore for the best part of like almost 30 years. I had no idea. Another thing I would add, just people in the UK, there is actually, if you're interested in finding out about your fertility, Superdrug, I believe, does like at-home tests that you can take. So you would, it's like a finger prick test. So you prick your finger and you submit like a blood sample, and they'll get back to you with some indicators of your fertility, which I think is really helpful, because I don't know how easy it is just to get these tests on the NHS. Even here, I did a home test kit to find out my initial situation. And you can use those things to have conversations with your doctor, and it kind of just takes things into your own hands a bit, which is really important if you're going to advocate for yourself and just be prepared for the future. So I think just education is what I can say. That would be my advice to anyone.
That's really, really useful. I think the not wanting to have children thing is really important, because when I did put that poll up the other day, I had so many people say, oh, I don't want children, and people pressure me all the time. And I was a bit like that, and I would never say anything to anybody, because I think it is just wrong to say something. But I was kind of the same. I was like, how do you know? Some of these girls that are putting that were like 20, 21. I'm like, you have no idea what you might want. And you know, I wouldn't tell somebody that because it sounds a bit patronizing, but I was kind of thinking like, you know, just hold on, you don't know, it could change, don't rule anything out, like you say.
100%. I was on the page of like, I don't want kids when I was like 25, and I didn't think that would change, but it did. I had a huge change of heart. So you honestly can't predict how you're going to feel in 10 years time. So I think just having the information early on, whether you act on it or not, it can't hurt you. It can only help you in the future, and just keep an open mind about the situation. I mean, I feel like it's quite cavalier to say, I don't want children, because you don't even know if you can have them. And that's what I would try and say to myself back then. Like, we're both saying, oh, we don't really want children, but it's not really a fact of what you want. It's like what's possible for you.
And it's a privilege, isn't it? It isn't just a fact, like you say. So yeah, that's a really important point. I'm always very cautious to say that. If anybody ever talks to me about having children, I always say, if we are lucky enough, because you've got to be so incredibly lucky to bring a child into this world. And that's a fact.
Yeah, it really is. It, like you said, it's definitely a privilege. And I think people just don't see it that way because it is like the most natural human behavior there is. And for a lot of people, it does go smoothly. But I think it's just important to know that it's not a given. It's not guaranteed for anybody. And the more that we can get that message out there and just tell people to be aware of their situation health-wise, I think it can only help. So
absolutely, totally agree. Oh, Lucy, that was brilliant. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Oh, thank you for having me on. I'm really happy to share our experience, and I hope that it's helped even one person. If anyone wants to reach out to me, I'd be happy to like talk more about anything or answer any questions specific to IVF or fertility or anything like that. So
brilliant. Yeah, well, I'll put your contact details down below on the show notes, so if anybody does want to get in touch with Lucy and talk about anything or ask her any questions, like you said, she's happy to answer. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been a pleasure, and yeah, I'll speak to you very soon.
All right, thanks Molly.
Thank you. I really hope you enjoyed the second episode of Grown Up Girls. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd please subscribe on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, that would mean the world. Thank you so much, guys, and I'll see you next week for the third episode of Grown Up Girls.